The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
There are reports that thousands of homes across the state are lying vacant due to a marked increase in the time it's taking to get them re-let. That's according to the latest figures contained in the National Oversight and Audit Commission annual report, which looked at council housing. Why the long delays when we're in the middle of a housing crisis? Well, I'm joined now by Labour senator and party spokesperson on housing. That's Rebecca Moynihan and Mel Reynolds, architect, project manager, conservation architect and a certified passive house designer. Good morning and welcome to you all. Now, let's go to you, Rebecca, first of all. Is this concerning? Because if it turns out to be on average 3% of the housing stock at any one time is unoccupied, that might not seem like an unacceptable figure.
So I suppose one of the problems are what's required in order for a house to be turned around. And I think we really need to have a common sense approach to it. A lot of local authorities, and they've received legal advice when it comes to insurance, is that they essentially have to bring it up to a spec and a standard, which means that they have to put everything of their own inside. So you see situations where, you know, like amazing top of the range kitchens are pulled out, they're left waiting for a while, then a standardised kitchen is put in. And I'm always getting people contacting me to say, you know, this house is there, it's been lying derelict for X amount of time. And often when you inquire about it, what the case is that they're waiting on an electrician, and then they may be waiting on a carpenter, and then they may be waiting on a plumber. And all of those things take time to come and pull together. But we need to get to a more simplified system where there is a basic health and safety standard, but that people have the right to be able to decorate their own home as well. And we just, if I was to buy a house tomorrow, I would assess, you know, is this livable for me in? And maybe down the line, I might replace the kitchen, or I might replace this, or I might replace that. Whereas an awful lot of the time is taking up by that really high spec, high standardized approach that local authorities quite rightfully are afraid of for security reasons. And that just doesn't make common sense to me.
So you're telling me that if, for example, and you know, I know someone who did sell a house to one of the councils and was scandalized by the fact that their brand new kitchen was literally put in a skip, or wherever it went, it was taken out. Maybe it was recycled informally somewhere, but it was certainly taken out of the home. They were scandalized. But you're saying that the reason is that who knows what kind of dodgy plumbing or dodgy electrical works might have gone into the installation of that kitchen, which the council cannot stand over.
Well, from my time in a local authority, that's what local authorities were told by insurance companies, that if there's anything happens in the house, that they're the ones that are liable. So you see those situations where, you know, incredible top of the range kitchens, or, you know, top of the range like inbuilt wardrobes are then pulled out, and then standardized kind of cheaper ones are then put in.
Tell me this, is there no such thing as inspection? Do you know, when I attempt to buy a house, I bring my surveyor along. The surveyor has a go. Now, there's certain things they're not allowed to do. They're not allowed to, you know, rip off the plaster to check things. But they give you a good report on the state of the house and what might need to be done. And that should be sufficient for the insurers. It's, you know, that kind of survey is sufficient for a bank or lending you maybe hundreds of thousands of euro. But it's somehow not good for the council's insurers. It doesn't make sense.
It does make sense to me. And that common sense approach. And so actually, if you look at the cost, you know, 26,000 euro in Cork alone, that's a huge cost before anybody moves into a house. Now, I'm not saying, you know, put somebody in a house sight unseen where it might be falling down around them by any stretch of the imagination. But we do need to apply some common sense when it comes to perfectly livable houses that somebody can move into in a much shorter space of time. The state might be spending money on them in homeless accommodation. They might be spending money on them in HAP. Like, that all adds itself up, and it has never made sense to me, never made sense to most councillors around the country, I think, that this is the approach that councils take. I understand it from their legal perspective, but we have to be able to find a legal way for them to be able to do it in a much simpler basis, shorter amount of time and less money.
Yeah. It strikes me, though, that they are paying housing assistance payments of either kind to house people in all sorts of Mickey Mouse accommodation, and the same kind of strictures don't apply. I mean, if the local authority or the government are effectively paying most of the rent and then it turns out to be dodgy accommodation. Where does the onus lie there?
Absolutely. And one of the questions I asked, so we had some hearings at the Housing Committee recently on Housing for All, was some of the holdups and things like the tenant in situ scheme, where let's say a landlord is selling, they're half tenants and the council should go in, I think, and buy the housing. And they were saying, well, sometimes they're not up to the standard of council housing and they can't take on landlord, they can't take on the problems of the private sector, yet they're perfectly willing to spend on average 1,900 per month on private sector housing. So those things, you know, it's basic common sense when it comes to housing that make no sense to me whatsoever. And, you know, there are certain things that you need to bring them up to standards. For example, you don't want anybody going into a house that's a fire risk, or you don't want to go anybody going into a house that's structurally unsound. But certain things, like when you have a top of the range kitchen or something just being replaced and the council having to rip it in to put it in a much cheaper standardised kitchen to go in, that the tenant will often want to change themselves to put their own stamp on it anyhow. And it's nonsensical.
Now, you mentioned wardrobes in passing. And I'm mystified as to what could make a wardrobe unsafe. Or is it for maintenance? Like if you have a sliding wardrobe, that the old sliders might get stuck and then you get a call to the council offices. Whereas if you've got doors that open on hinges, they're unlikely to go wrong. Is it something like stupid like that?
It's accidents and it's things like the council being sued. So if I fall, you know, if I fall outside in the footpath and the council haven't checked the footpath, I can sue the council for that.
Not quite that simple. We talked about that on the program before, and it's only if there's negligence on the part of the council. But if there happens to be a pothole that wasn't there last week and was not reported to the council, and you go into it, you're on your own. That's the law.
Yeah, but when it comes to the councils are very risk adverse when it comes to these things. And that's where you see situations like, let's say, inbuilt wardrobes being taken out. I don't know the reasoning or the rationale behind it. I don't see all of, you know, I haven't seen all of the legal advice, but they do that. And, you know, they're known for doing that. And that adds significantly to the cost when it comes to turning around those voids. So in some councils, you're seeing a shorter turnaround time. Some councils are seeing them an awful lot longer and more expensive. But just as a policy basis, it makes no sense.
Yeah. One of my texters says, Rebecca, local authorities, government in general, can be wasteful bureaucracies with daft notions, while some of their existing housing stock are full of damp.
Yes, exactly. So existing housing stock isn't checked and done. It's one of the things, I think, it's one of the low-hanging fruits that councils can have a look at in terms of turning around voids on a much shorter basis.
All right. Thanks, Rebecca, for that. Mel Reynolds, architect, conservation architect, certified designer of passive houses. He's done a fabulous one, which I've inspected myself. Terrific, absolutely. So Mel knows what he's doing in terms of rating houses up to A and even A plus and beyond. Mel, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, are we blaming that sort of BER demand for a slow turnaround, do you think?
No, Pat, I don't think so. I think if you think about it at the moment, we currently were doing modular housing for Ukrainian refugees, which is brand new. And under emergency powers, it doesn't need planning permission. And it's also the BER rating is going to be B2, which is below current minimum standards. So I don't buy that as being an excuse here. Certainly, if you have older stock where you've had a tenant in place for 20, 25 years, it may need to be rewired, replumbed, etc. That's absolutely fine. In an instance, certainly a lot of people buy existing houses, live in them for 2 or 3 years, and then decide to do work. Certainly a lot of my clients would be like that. So if you have a house that's habitable, that has been habitable recently, chances are there's no issues really with somebody moving in straight away. I'd imagine the issue here is a standardised approach so that every tenant gets the same level of kitchen, bathroom, etc. And that's why a lot of this apparently wasteful stuff is done. But under emergency powers, I don't see why the local authorities can't say, okay, listen, we have a house here, it needs work done to it, let's move in a refugee family or two for 2 years, and then we'll do the work at that point. I suppose the maddening thing about this is 3-4% sounds like an okay number, and under normal criteria, it's a normal level of vacancy. But we're looking at over 4,000 vacant dwellings in local authorities, which is a huge number. The NOAC report used to do a really useful breakdown of vacancy where they had, I think in 2017, there was about 1,050 long-term vacant units that had been vacant for 10 years or longer that were pending regeneration. So they were going to be demolished. And I suppose a lot of parts of Dublin City in particular, when you walk around, you look left and right and you'll see boarded up units in schemes that are still have tenants in them. There's one near the Davenport, and there's one near Mantua Square as well. So these are schemes that you say, you know what, maybe go in here, spend 40,000 to do up this apartment. It doesn't necessarily have to be to local authority standards, but it gets it to a point where somebody can move in and we can use these really, really quickly for emergency accommodation. So what I would love to see in the NOAC report is go back to where they used to do breakdowns of how long has the stock in each local authority been vacant, which would be really, really useful. I wouldn't be surprised if there wasn't 800 or 900 long-term vacant units that have been vacant for
now,
10 years.
Now, Mel, sometimes there are antisocial behaviour elements as to why a house is not occupied. I mean, burnt-out houses, for example, and there's, you know, such an atmosphere in the estate that no one would want to move in. I won't mention estates by name for fear of, you know, labelling people, but that kind of thing happens. And, you know, they won't be refurbished until there's massive regeneration in the area because, you know, they won't get people to move in. And if people come from outside the jurisdiction and move in not knowing the situation on the ground, they could live to regret it.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's one straight away right beside the Davenport Hotel. There's three local authority schemes. One of them has boarded up units on the ground floor. There's no appearance of antisocial behaviour there. It's right in the centre of Dublin too. And you think, hold on a minute, what's going on here? Could somebody not move in and put six or eight families in there in a really short period of time? Mountjoy Square, it's the same thing. There's an entire block of, looks like a 70s block, which could be refurbished relatively quickly for small money, and you'd get people in straight away, even on a temporary basis. So, I mean, that sort of accommodation isn't 100% perfection is the enemy of progress. And I think something like that is far better than a camp bed up in Dublin Airport at the moment. Now, the only reason I can see why this isn't being done is that the Ukrainian influx isn't being seen as part of a housing problem, which is bananas. So I think, you know, what I'd love to see would be that 4,400 number broken down to see where are the ones that we can really attack here and get moving on.
Now, the question of what I said there about, you know, you get a surveyor if you're looking for a mortgage from a bank, and the bank then will be satisfied with that professional appraisal of a property and a second-hand property. I mean, new properties are a slightly different kettle of fish because they should be done to the required standard laid down in law. But older properties, you go along to the bank and this is my surveyor's report, and the bank give you a couple of hundred grand on that say-so. Do you understand why local authorities don't use that technique to satisfy their insurers?
I don't, actually. It makes no sense to me. And I know that there's certainly, like, if you look at existing stock, I think TAN, the Community Action Network, took an EU case on behalf of 20 communities in Dublin City back in 2016 about their living conditions. And some of the conditions for existing tenants were unbelievable. I mean, if that was the private rented sector, there would be a huge scandal over it. So, you know, existing tenancies are subject to certain problems and condition problems as well, some of them pretty acute as well. So, you know, if you're going to buy an existing house, as you say, you get an inspection, a surveyor will come in, list out the items that need to be looked at. If the place needs to be rewired, that can be done within a few days, actually. If you use the same routes, you can fish through all the cables, a good electrician will come in and do that pretty quickly, and can also keep somebody in place when they're being done. So there's an awful lot of this stuff can be done if you step back and say, in a common sense fashion, as the director said there, and can be done when somebody is there. So I think if it's possible, the local authorities do have a high standard for their new stock or stock that's being purchased. I think in an emergency situation, maybe we need to say, okay, let's see what we can do here. Can we get somebody in pending this work being done? Is it good enough to get some?
And Mel, as an architect, I presume you can look at a particular house and know what the standard was at the time it was built. If it's a 1970s house, for example, you'd know, you know, they were using copper, not lead, that kind of thing. Were they, what were they using for the central heating pipes, if indeed there's central heating there, all that kind of thing. So you'd know where the potential pitfalls were, and you'd go look for them if you were a surveyor.
Absolutely. And what the advice you'd give somebody at the time would be allow a contingency there for if the wiring is tired, if it's over 25 years old, you can't get, you can't extend it, you can't alter it. Recce will require that house to be rewired. If the plumbing might need a little bit of work, there's stuff that you'll will always need some work that you don't know at the outset. So you just have a contingency for that. And the way you find that out when you're in and when you start doing work to it, you know, in terms of something being structurally unsound, it's housing is very, it's very difficult to get something. You have to try really hard to make something have a structural problem. Or if a property has been vacant for a prolonged period and there's been water ingress, you have problems on it. But in the main, you know, and a good surveyor going in will spot things and will caveat it out and get somebody in. And you can get, as I said, you can rewire an entire house over 2 or 3 days. It doesn't take 6 months. Yeah. Or 7 months to do it. And if an existing kitchen, it may not be the right colour configuration, but it's perfect. I was in a house recently and they had a kitchen from the mid-70s and it looked great. It was back in fashion. Now, that being said, it didn't have all the mod cons and all the rest of it. But if the place is clean, if the plumbing works, if the heating system works, and don't forget, a lot of local authority units will have to be, particularly in Dublin City where the units are older, will need to be refurbished under the SEAI grant system anyway. So an awful lot of that is going to happen to existing stock as well. So in some ways, it makes very little sense kitting out a building internally with all new stuff for a certain amount of that to be taken up when it's being retrofitted as well. So maybe a bit of a pause for thought and coordinate what we're doing as well.
Bearing in mind, it is an emergency, so needs must. Mel, thank you very much for joining us. Mel Reynolds, architect, project manager, conservation architect, of course, and a certified passive house designer. Thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.